Before we go into the Bible study, I've got a few news items that I think would be worthwhile to bring to your attention. Things that have been in the paper over this past week or so. And I've got it into two broad areas. One is the kind of repercussions from the current state of marriage. And the other is the attitude that we have towards the terrorism aspects within society. I think these are the two basic areas that I think I'll cover today. This particular one was from the first of this month. It says, marriage is only till 30 us do part. And it says, women in their 20s help raise divorce rate to a new high. It says, women who marry in their 20s are adding to the soaring divorce rate by splitting from their husbands before they reach 30, figure showed yesterday. It goes on, it says, divorce for men peaks among the 30 to 35 age group with nearly 28 divorces per thousand. And the average age for men getting divorced is 42 and for women 39. The growing rate undermines the theory that because fewer people are marrying, those who do are more committed to making the relationship last. So not only is it a case that the divorce rate is going up, but the marriage rate is actually going down anyway. People aren't getting married. It says the figures from the Home Office, from the Office of National Statistics, also underestimate the true figure for breakdowns in relationships, because many couples live together outside marriage, and they are even more likely to split up. So it is interesting that when you turn over, if you turn over with me to Deuteronomy 28, and look at the curses that God mentions. He's mentioning this in Deuteronomy 28. In verse 15, where it says, but it shall come to pass, if you do not listen to the voice of the Eternal your God to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes that I command you this day, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. So there's a result. If we don't go ahead and keep God's laws, including the laws regarding marriage as well, there are various curses. It says, cursed shall you be in the city, and cursed shall you be in the field. In other words, from the breaking of the laws, there are different curses that actually affect other areas in society. And that's what I want to really bring out today. Because here we're seeing that marriage is only till 30 us do part. In other words, the marriage is progressively becoming more and more shaky. But the repercussions from that can also be seen in the other headlines that we've seen within the last week. It says, cursed shall you be your basket in your store, cursed shall be the fruit of your body, and the fruit of your land, the increase of your kind, the flocks of your sheep. And he goes on in verse 30, it says, you will betroth a wife, and another man will lie with her. You'll build a house, and you'll not dwell there. You will plant a vineyard, you'll not gather the grapes thereof. You see, from this breakup of marriage, also it has implications within the family structure. It also has implications within the actual housing market as well, and throughout society. Your ox will be slain before your eyes, and you will not eat thereof. Your ass will be violently taken away from before your face, it will not be restored to you. Your sheep will be given to your enemies, and you will have none to rescue you. And there are curses that are actually coming through the system that we don't really tend to equate to the some headline that is like the one I've just read about marriage is only until 30. And it says, your sons and your daughters will be given to another people, and your eyes will look and shall fail with longing for them all day long, and there'll be no might in your hand. Now, yes, it's referring there primarily to invasion, but nevertheless, it also can apply. You can apply it even in the current situation. It says on the 28th of August, this was last weekend, last Saturday, it says abortions were at the record 37,000 for teenagers. Now again, these are, you have marriage which is only till 30 us do part, you therefore have single mothers bringing up children, and the girls are looking for a fatherly figure. They're looking for love and affection. And these kind of things lead to, many times, to the teenage pregnancies. It says, a spokesman for the health department said that the figures are disappointing. However, no contraception method is 100% effective, and there will always be women seeking abortions as they are legally entitled to do. Figures also show that almost a third of women who have an abortion have had one before, and despite the government pledge to halve underage underage procedures during the current decade, there was also a rise in the recorded abortion rate among the under 16s from 3 to 7 per 1,000 3.7 per 1,000 to 3.9. It says the way abortion is offered and the way women come back again and again to have one shows that we've been desensitized to the stupendous significance of abortion to the individual concerned, said the Society of Protection of Unborn Children. There's some sort of normality attached to abortion now, and people feel got at if they confess to regrets afterwards. But that is a repercussion. It's a repercussion of the failing marriages. It's a repercussion of our attitude towards marriage and towards the family. Another one from the 30th, that'd be Monday. It says more over 50s are homeless due to the rise in divorce. So this marriage is only till 30th do part. It also have another repercussion. It says a surge in divorce and breakdown in relationships has created unprecedented homeless problems for the over 50s, according to the government-funded research published today. 2 in 3 of those who become homeless at the age of 50 or older have never been without a home before, said the report of the Economic and Social Research Council. The most commonly reported reason for homelessness were to do with financial and relationship problems. So again, there you're looking at another repercussions, as it says here. It says, you know, you build a house and you will not dwell there. And this happens. You know, people go ahead and they get married, they build a house, the wife has the children, and the man is then out of the house. And this is the way the courts tend to regard it. And it is a repercussion of the attitude within our society towards marriage, or the lack of appreciation towards marriage. Another one, this was on the 9th of this month. It says a 10-hour school day will go nationwide. It says a pilot scheme to open 1,000 primaries for 10 or more hours a day will eventually be extended nationwide, Charles Clark, the Education Secretary, said yesterday. The schools will offer wraparound childcare from early morning to evening to help working parents, and families will play a contribution to the childcare element of the package, which will include breakfast, after-school clubs, and the learning support. So a child will be there, will actually be packed off there for breakfast, stay there all the way through the day, and then have the evening meal there as well for 10 hours in the day. And where's the family life? This is a result of marriage is only till 30th do part. And we're looking at a consequence of breaking of God's laws. And so often we see certain headlines like this and we don't see the real problems that are coming. We read something in Deuteronomy 28 and we don't see links between one and the other. And this is a problem. Another one from the 2nd of this month, it says stress does increase the risk of heart attack. Stress is a cause of heart attacks, after all, and is nearly as important as smoking, according to a study. You know, they've been poo-pooing the idea that stress and heart attacks are linked, and yet people obviously have known that they have been linked, and yet certain doctors have been poo-pooing it. The Interheart study among 29,000 people in 52 countries, half of whom have experienced a heart attack, found that psychological factors increase the risk of heart attack 2.5 times, while smoking increases the risk nearly 3 times. Doctors have argued for years about the importance of stress in heart disease and have tended to take this view that if it does have an effect, it is something that can be triggering, it is something that could trigger a heart attack event in somebody who is already diagnosed. But the study suggests that stress may be a cause in its own right. It looked at 9 easily measured risk factors for heart disease, including smoking, high blood pressure, diabetes, internal fat, lack of exercise, consumption of fruit and vegetables, stress, and high blood fats. And psychosocial factors measure stress and psychological health. And overall, the Interheart study to the published in The Lancet tomorrow showed that high blood fats and smoking together could predict 2/3 of the cases of high heart attacks. And it goes on into the article. But you say, well, how does that regard to marriage. Well, again, you cannot go through a divorce, and the children cannot go through a divorce without having the stresses involved. That simply is not possible. The stresses involved prior to the divorce and during the divorce itself is a problem. And yet here, on the 7th, this was on the 2nd of this month, that was back on Thursday, on the 7th of this month, it says 1 in 5 teenagers show signs of heart disease. So 1 in 5 of the teenagers. And if you put those two together, then you wonder about their analysis here. It says the couch potato way of life has become so common that 1 in 5 young teenagers suffers from early signs of heart disease and stroke, a disturbing new study has found. But is that all it is? Or is it also the fact that you're looking at single parents and homes that are being broken up and the stresses involved, along with the kind of lifestyle that we have? Tests on children aged 11 to 14 showed 20% with the sort of blood vessel damage normally associated with cardiovascular disease regarded as an adult condition. It says about 2.7 million people in Britain suffer from heart disease, and the number is rising. Almost 1 in 8 has been diagnosed with heart or circulatory disease, and Britain has the developed world's fastest growing rate of obesity, the BHF says. Only 37% of men and 25% of women take the recommended 30 minutes of exercise at least 5 times a week. Some 22% of women are clinically obese, and about a quarter of children are overweight or obese. But as I say, that is only one aspect of it. It's when you start putting the other factors together as well, we can see that you've got the fast foods, you've also got the stresses involved, you've got the lack of exercise, and again, it's going against the way of God. And if we go against the way of God, then we will it's an inevitable consequence of our lifestyle, of our way. And we're seeing that, we're witnessing it. But what I did, the reason why I brought these things out, is really to urge us to look a little bit more deeply at the news, and to realize that there are links between the different items that you will actually read. They're not just, even items such as 1 in 5 teenagers show signs of heart disease, that is also linked to marriage is only till 30 years do part. And it's a case of linking those things together, certainly in the social area. Now, the other area I wanted to really deal with was about the war on terror, and particularly I want to talk a little bit about the boredom that seems to be setting in regarding the war on terror. There's an article here from today's Daily Telegraph. It's got a cartoon of this man in front of the television and this terrorist with a hood over his face giving some kind of spiel on the television, and the man is fast asleep. But coming through the door behind him is a terrorist with a gun, and somebody's lying dead on the floor. So in other words, we are bored to tears with what's going on in our newspapers and televisions and so on, regard to terrorism, and yet at the same time, the threat is always there. It says 3 years on, and we're bored to death with a war on terror. It says Orson Welles famously said that the only two emotions one feels about on an aeroplane are boredom and fear. On the third anniversary of 9/11, these two emotions predominate, competing with one another in the same breast. Fear is obvious. That's why terrorism is called terrorism. It's the ideology of fear, a belief that you can and should advance your cause by terrifying people. Boredom is less obvious, but it's a tremendously powerful weapon for fanatics to deploy against public opinion in the West. Now, if we just turn over to 2 Peter chapter 3. We have Sylvia with us today. But it's not Sylvia making the noise. But we're very pleased to welcome her from the States. But in 2 Peter chapter 3, where it says that the second epistle, beloved, in verse 1, I now write to you, in both which I stir up your pure minds by way of remembrance, that you may be mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets and of the commandments of us, the apostles of the Lord and Savior. Knowing this first, in other words, keep this in mind, because this is the kind of, and these words have been preserved right down to our day. And it says, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after their own lust, their own, what they want to do. And it says, and saying, where's the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. So this attitude, it appears to be in the church, almost like a boredom and saying, oh, well, you know, Christ isn't returning and so on. And it's an attitude that's being reflected from the world. Because within the world also, we can see a certain boredom setting in. It says in the bottom of this article, it says, in our Sussex village in May the 1940, my grandfather met an elderly neighbour on the green. I'm afraid the news from France is very bad, Mrs. X, he said. This is 1940, so you're looking at the Second World War. It says, oh, I never bother my head with that sort of thing, she answered. There was something reassuring about that remark. It emerged from a fundamentally peaceful and confident society. That's the sort of society that one should defend to the death. But if one is not careful, death becomes the operative word. We were warned about that 3 years ago, but already we're forgetting. And the warning was 9/11. And today, 3 years to the day, we are not necessarily listening to the warning. At the same time as that, when we're looking at this, this kind of lack of interest in what's going on, there's another underlying trend as well that's taking place. This is from the Daily Mail. This is the Mail on Sunday, that's August the 29th. And it says on page 27, it says, a Russian lesson for Blunkett. Mr. Blunkett is the Home Secretary. It says, police states do not stop terror. And he goes on, he says, imagine what would happen if two passenger planes left a British or American airport on the same night and fell mysteriously from the sky. There would be livid denunciation of airport security failures. There would be mass arrests of Arab suspects and tight-lipped statements of anger and vengeance from politicians. Most of the media would join in a frenzy of panic-driven demands for emergency measures. There would almost certainly be the immediate introduction of identity cards, several other attacks on liberty supposedly excused by the need to combat terror. Then look at what actually did take place when this happened in Russia. Despite evidence that one of the planes was sent out to hijack alert, the Kremlin sought to pretend that this was not a terrorist incident. The state-controlled TV channel stopped mentioning the hijacked alert. The government's pet newspapers insisted there was nothing to worry about. We'll eventually find out what the truth is, but that's not the point. The point is that Vladimir Putin's Russia already has all the anti-terror measures that Mr. David Blunkett could possibly want. So you're looking at a state over there where they've already got these things and the personal liberties have been taken away. And yet what does that do? It gives the government the ability to therefore quash any news. To quash news in a way that you don't get over here. It says, identity cards have been compulsory for years, you can barely move without one, and the internal security police are huge and powerful. So they have got that, but it doesn't stop the terrorism. What it does is it actually allows the state to merely control the media, to control the news of what is actually happening. Now, It's an area that we need to watch. It's an area that we need to be aware of, that there is an enormous call to erode any kind of personal freedoms. And when that happens, the indication biblically is that it's going to have an effect on us, that the indication is that we also will have certain freedoms eroded. And, you know, free speech as such does at least allow us to say whatever we wish at this present time. I say whatever we wish. It's not quite true. You've got these kind of thought crimes over in Canada, and I think over here as well to some degree. Another one from the 9th, it says, Britain last night gave Iran 2 months to come clean about its nuclear program and halt work on enrichment of uranium or face a demand for United Nations sanctions. After more than a year of engagement with Tehran over its nuclear ambitions, which America believes are designed to make a nuclear bomb, a senior British official said European countries were running out of patience, and the Government Board of International Atomic Energy Agency meets next week, and the official said Western countries would seek a resolution, setting the board's next meeting in November as the point of decision. So there is another country that has nuclear or is in the process of trying to obtain nuclear weapons. Another article as well that appeared on the 8th, this is on Wednesday, this last Wednesday. It says Turkey's Muslim millions threaten the EU values, says the commissioner. Now, this is a very significant area, very significant, because I mentioned last week within the news, when we're looking at the Muslim, the historical role of the Muslim world, it seemed to trigger the very Catholic backlash within the Holy Roman Empire. And it almost certainly, something along those lines, well, certainly they could happen again. Whether it actually will, we'll have to wait and see, but be aware that it certainly portends evil for the future. But here is the commissioner within the EU saying that Turkey's Muslim millions are going to threaten EU values. Now, Turkey's not yet a member, but it is applying for membership. It's trying to get in. It says a European commissioner set off a furious row yesterday after warning that Europe's Christian civilization risked being overrun by Islam. Fritz Bolkestein, the single market commissioner and a former leader of the Dutch Liberals, said that the European Union would implode in its current form if 70 million Turkish Muslims were allowed to join. He predicted that Turkish accession would overwhelm the fragile system and finish off any lingering dreams of a fully integrated European superstate. In a speech at Leiden University, he compared the EU to the late Austrian Hungarian Empire, which took so many different people on board in such a haphazard fashion that it eventually became ungovernable. Calling democracy the mother of politics, he said that white America had the youth and dynamism to remain the world's only superpower, and China was the rising economic power. Europe's destiny was to be Islamized. In comments designed to provoke fury in Ankara, he quoted the American author Bernard Lewis, warning that Europe would become an extension of North Africa and the Middle East by the end of the century. Now, we look at that and we see a voice there, and yet if you turn over to Revelation 13, we can actually see the direction in which it will go. In Revelation 13, verse 11, now here remember, these are inset chapters, and this is describing the relationship between Satan and his system, his Babylonian system. But in Revelation 13, verse 11, it says, I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. This is the religious system, the resurrected Holy Roman Empire. And he exercised all the power of the first beast before him, and caused the earth and those that dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. And he does great wonders, so that he makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. Now, we've never seen that yet. So we're looking at this beast, which is a Holy Roman Empire, and yet we're also looking at individuals that are linked in with this beast, and they're called the beast and the false prophet, as we'll go and see. And deceives those that dwell on the earth by the means of the miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image of the beast, which had a wound by the sword and did live. And he had power to give life to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many that would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. So again, we're looking at this article that we just read from the Daily Mail, how these personal liberties are being eroded steadily, and the warnings that are going out, it will not, they will not be listened to. Eventually, we're looking at a virtual police state. And it talks about, here is a beast that is encouraged into being by what will be a religious leader. And he caused all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark on their right hand and their foreheads, and that's to do with the Sabbath, and that no man may buy or sell unless he had the mark or the name of the beast, the number of his name. And here is wisdom. Let him that has understanding count the number of the beast, for it's the number of a man, and his number is 666. Now, we don't know who that individual is, but certainly we need to be watching, and watching very carefully. And certainly, if somebody rises to prominence and a certain title applies to him, we should be counting that the numbers that are actually in that title within both Hebrew and Greek, and just seeing whether they are they do add up to 666. If we turn over to Revelation 19, Revelation 19, we see in Revelation 19 the end of this particular system. And we're looking at the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, verse 16 and verse 19. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles. So the miracles within this Holy Roman Empire were coming from a false prophet. Is coming from the religious leader, which is why the Islamization and the reaction against it is so important. It says, wrought miracles before him with which he deceived those that had received the mark of the beast and those that worshipped his image, and these both were cast alive into a lake of fire burning with brimstone. And the remnant was slain with the sword of him that sat on the horse, which sword proceeded out of his mouth, and all the fowls were filled with their flesh. Now, if we turn over, we actually see this occur over in, yes, I think, final scripture. Turn over to Isaiah 31. Isaiah 31, we can actually see this event taking place, and we can see why we believe, and there are other scriptures as well, that the one who will be the political leader of these two, the beast and the prophet, is going to be Germanic. Whether he will actually be German, I'm not sure, but he will be Germanic, because we're looking in Isaiah 31, it says, verse 6, turn you unto him from whom the children of Israel have deeply revolted. And this is the problem within our society, and we've just read many headlines from that indicate this. For in that day every man will cast away his idols of silver and idols of gold, which your own hands have made, unto you for a sin. And, you know, even within this computer here, there's undoubtedly gold connections. And within our modern world, we do have idols that we've made. Then shall, verse 8, then shall the Assyrian fall with the sword. So he's going to fall by war, but not of a mighty man. And the sword, not of a mighty man, not of a mean man, shall devour him. So what will happen? What is this that will happen to the Assyrian in this context? Because the very next verse in chapter 22 is, behold, a king will reign in righteousness. So we're just before going into the millennial rule. This Assyrian will be destroyed, and as we've just read over in Revelation 19, He and the false prophet will be put into a lake of fire burning with brimstone. They will be destroyed in some way within some kind of a volcanic area or whatever. But it won't be the sword of a mighty man or a mean man. It'll be an angelic being that grabs them by the scruff of the necks and throws them in. That seems to be the indication. But he shall flee from the sword, and his young men shall be discomfited. And it says that the, in other words, you're looking at Christ will fight against them. And he shall pass over his strong hand for hold for fear, and princes shall be afraid of the ensign, says the Eternal, whose fire is in Zion, and his furnace in Jerusalem. As I say, you read Isaiah, and you start separating out the individuals. Zion is the church. Jerusalem seems to be those associated with the church. And then it says, behold, a king will reign in righteousness. But it certainly appears that we're looking at the beast being mentioned here in verse 8, then the Assyrian will fall with the sword, but it's not going to be a human sword that destroys him. It'll be eventually an angelic sword, and the indication in Revelation is that it will be he will be destroyed by actually being thrown into something like a volcanic area to be destroyed.